On this episode of the Tough Juice Podcast, I had my good friend, basketball legend. I'm not going to say WNBA, NBA, just basketball legend as a whole. Super, come on the Tough Juice Podcast and talk a lot of things about playing overseas and how that prepared her for the COVID-19 situation, being on lockdown and what we're going through as well. And also the consistent greatness of pedigree at the University of UConn. The women's basketball program has been second to none over the last couple decades, and just how they continue to excel and be dominant. And none other than a huge advocate, none other than my brother, the late great Kobe Bryant, how he's been a huge asset to the game of basketball, women's basketball as well, him and Gianna, and how the toll of that whole impact of everything that happened had an impact on her, and one of her biggest takeaways from the life of Kobe Bryant. Tune in to the Tough Juice Podcast here on the Himalaya app or wherever you listen to your podcast. Look, I truly appreciate you making time, even though you had to download the app and go through all this craziness to get on. You know what I mean? That's what we do. Bleed Blue. I appreciate that.
Of course, man. Of course.
So what you've been up to, like, during this whole period and this time of, you know, practicing social distancing?
Yeah. I mean, not a lot. Just hanging out. I was telling you earlier, I was in Washington. I was in Seattle when, like, it all kind of started to hit. So it was probably, like, end of February, early March-ish. And that kind of changed my whole perspective on it, because I immediately realized from being out there, like, oh, this is real. And then the funny thing is, I had to come to the East Coast because I was going to do a lot of ESPN work for the tournament. So I came East Coast, and the second I landed, I was like, oh, people aren't taking it seriously out here. Like, it was just a difference, and you could literally feel it. So right away, like literally right away, like the first week of March, I got here and I was already kind of like social distancing. I was already like staying away from my family. My mom came to see me like one last time. My mom's over 70. So it was just like, mom, sorry. Like, I didn't even want to hug her, nothing. So we had lunch like 3 feet apart, and then that was it. So I've been kind of doing this. Megan's here with me, so I have someone, which is great. So it's never a dull moment, but we pretty much have been like doing this close to a month now. So, it's the same as everyone, boring at times, creative at times. I don't know, chilling.
And is that something that you guys do anyway, though? Like you said, like you was practicing social distancing. I'm a germaphobe.
Oh,
like every time I touch something, I wipe my hands. When I get on airplanes, I wipe the seats down. I do all that. Like, is that something that you do anyway?
Hold on. Something just popped out. Don't switch. Okay. Do I still have you?
Yeah. I'm here.
Okay. Something popped out. Anyways. No, I'm not like that at all. I actually make fun of my teammate who does wipe down the seats on the plane. I'm like, yo, they probably just did that. It's fine. So no, I'm not like that at all. So this is like total 180. But now I'm like.
I'm looking at you crazy, because even if you, as much as we travel as professional athletes, if you was like on the road, like before I pick up a phone, I'm like, I'm wiping that shit. I'm doing all that. Like, You don't mess with it. You just pick it up. Hello, room service.
Yeah, probably. What I do though is I don't walk barefoot in hotel room. Like, even when I'm in the room, like I'll keep my socks as long as humanly possible. The minute I take them off, take a shower, put something right back on, I do that. And then of course the comforter. I'm not messing with the comforter. That's like,
you're not touching it.
Nah, it comes off immediately. So that, I'm like, there's some there, but I definitely don't, not the way I'm wiping stuff down now. I'm getting an Amazon package, like, so yeah, totally.
So you said you and Megan there now, like, what are you guys doing to not get on each other's nerves? Because I just realized that I've been married for a long, long, and I was thinking about coming up with like a divorce app for people that's going to need it. Well, like, what have you guys been doing to like not get on each other's nerves?
I mean, we've actually been talking, like, it's either going to be a lot of divorce or a lot of babies coming out of this quarantine. Have you heard the one where it's like they're going to be called the, oh, I can't remember now. The quarantina. Oh, I can't remember now. Quarantine something. Anyways, We're just, I mean, honestly, we've actually been apart a lot in the last like year. Megan won the World Cup and life like totally changed. She's been crazy busy. So it's actually been nice to spend some time together. We are in like a little apart. We're in a one bedroom right now. So it's kind of, it's not a lot of space, but we're making it work.
So like, you got to touch on two of these things, because I know, you know, the postponement of, you know, the Olympics, her season, your season coming up. You know, yeah. I know you trained extremely hard to get in optimum shape and all those things. And then you had the Olympics as well coming up. Touch on all them things, and what does it mean for you guys not to have that to look forward to in the near
future? Yeah. So it's kind of like you can look at it two ways. In one sense, I think every athlete, to be honest, not just us, is probably relieved that it's just postponed, the Olympics, and mm-hmm. not canceled. Because I think canceling it was definitely on the table. So to have it just be postponed a year is great news. You know, in some ways, it's like, for me personally, I've been to four Olympics. I've been lucky enough. I actually start to think of people who, whether this was going to be their first, you know, or maybe it was, you know, some like individual sport athletes like track and swimming, like they have to qualify and they have to do all this. Maybe this was the time. So the fact that it didn't get canceled, I think, is amazing news. In some ways like a relief that they made the decision, because now we can all kind of like move on and do what we need to do. For myself, for Megan, like you said, because we have our seasons coming up and there's still so many question marks, it is a little awkward. You know, it's like we are trying to work out, you know, in the ways that we can and kind of stay in shape, but then it's also like, what if this never happened? Like, is it all for nothing? So it is kind of this like weird, awkward thing. But I mean, whatever. Working out's good for you anyways. That's kind of how I'm approaching it. I'm like, I'm doing this for my health more than anything.
So pretty much you stay ready, you ain't got to get ready.
Kind of, yeah. Except at this age, I'm like, I can't go blowing my load like right out the gate. You know, like I need to save some on my knees. I can't just like, my knees can't take all this. So I got to like be smart about it.
What, like, are you hearing anything about this season, this upcoming? Any projections or any like target dates that the WNBA are thinking?
Yeah, no target dates. Actually, today we just announced that, or they just announced that it's like officially postponed. So we were supposed to start like April 28th, and then I think opening night was like May 15th. So that has officially been postponed, and they didn't give a date, which I think is smart, because like honestly, who knows? Like, there's so many unknowns. I don't think. I mean, I keep saying this. I'm like, we're not going to know till we know. Like, every day is something new. So we'll see. I mean, I think they're toying with the idea. All the ideas that we've all heard about on TV, I think the WNBA is toying with as well. Like, all right, if we go fanless, what does that look like? Okay, if we go fanless, but we can't travel and we just need to be in one city, like, what does that look like? You know, like all those different scenarios. But it's, I mean, to execute it is hard. I personally think, like, as far as like society goes or whatever, sports is going to be like the last thing to return to normal, like full on normal. I think that's going to be one of the last things.
Have you been one of those individuals that always had a really good pulse of the reality of, you know, our world? Because I think a lot of people are starting to come to a grips of, you know, life without entertainment and the distraction of the reality of all the things that's happening around us. Like, how has that been for you, like, and, you know, other people around you that you know?
Karan, let me tell you this. Women's basketball players, WNBA players, and really any player, like male player too, that has played overseas is like fully prepared for what's going on right now. This is what overseas living is like. I'm not even joking. Like, you live in a foreign country. You kind of go out, but like on off days, you usually just like hang out in your apartment. You know, you don't, you know, it's like you go to the grocery store, you might show up and they might not have chicken that day, and you just kind of move on to the next. Like, this is what overseas, and it's funny because I've talked to a lot of my friends and they all say the same thing. It's like, this is exactly what living and playing overseas is like. It's obviously a little harder. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to, but you find ways to entertain yourself. You binge on TV shows, you listen to music, maybe you learn an instrument. Like, one year I tried to learn Russian on the Rosetta Stone. Like, you just find ways to like entertain yourself and keep it moving. So like, I'm kind of living my, I mean, like, thank God my family and friends are like good to go. I have some friends that tested positive, but they're still healthy and they're okay. Symptoms are like, you know, minor. So to be honest, I'm kind of living my best life. I did this in Russia for 10 years. I'm like right back where I was.
Damn. So is it anything that you picked up in the last month or so that we should, you know, be on the lookout for? Because you said Rosetta Stone, you practicing Russian. Like what you pick up now?
I mean, we might get a guitar. Megan can actually play the guitar, so it would be more like I would have to learn. Yeah. I mean, listen, might as well, right? We actually, one thing we've been doing is we've been doing some IG live. Like the two of us go on, we just kind of like talk and chat. We do it like once a week. That's been pretty fun, to be honest. But yeah, we haven't learned anything new yet, but I don't know. We might be doing this for a long time. So look out.
that's so crazy. Like, and speaking of Megan and you guys' relationship, has been like this publicized ever since 2017. Like what went into like the thought process of just, you know, coming out and letting it be known that you guys were a couple?
Yeah, I think it's weird because I was like out for all intent and purposes for a long time. Like my family knew, my friends knew. I didn't hide it. If I was dating somebody, like I would hold their hand. Like it wasn't, you know, I really didn't hide it. I just hadn't said it publicly. And for a while I fought that in a way. I was kind of like, why do you have to say it publicly? Like if you're living your life, what's the difference? Like,
yeah.
What, you know, but now that I have said it publicly, it does feel a little different. There is like a little bit of a weight off my shoulders. It's nice that people kind of know who you are and what you're about, like right from the start, versus like having to, I joke, like all these like small come outs. Like I was, because I hadn't said it publicly, whenever I met someone new, it was like a mini come out. Like every time I had to come out like 30 times. So it's nice to just have done it once and it be done. And yeah, I think for both of us, we can kind of just have a relationship, live our lives. There's ups, there's downs, like everything else. But I think being open and kind of sharing that with people allows to, you know, gain confidence in themselves. We hear that a lot from a lot of different people, that we help them, you know, do X, Y, and Z in their life. So it's been cool.
That's what my next question was going to be, like the reality versus, okay, we're coming out there, we're an item, and it's great for the world to know, and it's going to encourage others to not live in fear and all those things. But mm-hmm. Was the reality versus the expectations you know, the feedback from, you know, look, you're a public figure. Like, did you think the perception of everything of what you guys went through was going to be taken in or pushed away? Like, did you go through that process?
I actually think like there was really no negativity, like for real. I would say it was like 99% positive. There was like every now and then one asshole who would like say something, but for the most part, never to my face, by the way. Never to my face, only facts. On social media. Yeah, you know how it is. So, yeah, it was so much. It was actually so much positive stuff. I was like shocked by it. Like it really surprised me in a good way. Like I just wasn't expecting it. So to have like people like almost in tears tell me that, you know, for me and Megan to, you know, talk the way we do, live our lives, gave them that, you know, confidence to do the same, to not live in fear, like you said. There was like so much of that. So that was pretty cool. That was something I really wasn't expecting.
Yeah, when you look back at everything, and I know you have accomplishments and still going to add on to that amazing legacy that you have created, like who are some of the people that inspired you, you know, from the beginning to be the best version of Sue Bird?
Yeah, I was really lucky because I have a sister who's 5 years older, and I was lucky because here was someone who, she's like incredibly smart, incredibly motivated. I mean, even now when I watch her in her job and like what she does, it's just, she's every day on it. And I got to have that like firsthand in my house every day, somebody to watch. And I think the combination of that, you know, really looking up to my older sister, following in her footsteps, wanting to anyways. And the combination of that and having my parents who were very much like, I don't know, they really just like allowed us to kind of find our own path, like never push, never pressure, just kind of allowed us to find. There was just a nice combination that in my own household, you know, I was able to kind of grow, but also be inspired. And it really kind of got me going. And then when I think about my career overall, like just like basketball specific, I was really lucky. This is more like, it's not necessarily about like inspiring. It's just someone who, you know, we have that like one person who's like in your corner. They're kind of like that truth teller and you kind of like need that little voice in your ear. So for me, I've been lucky to have a lot of great coaches. Like I could put many in that category. I could put Coach Rayama, to be honest, in this category. He's definitely somebody who still to this day annoys the crap out of me, but he's speaking the truth. But I was also lucky to play for Jenny Busek.
Okay.
She's actually for the Mavs now, but she was my assistant in Seattle for, I think it's like 6-7 years. And then she was our head coach for 2 years. And just throughout, has always kind of been there every step of the way for me. Anytime I needed, again, like the truth or even sometimes, I don't know, just like a reminder, you know, like, hey, like you're good at this. You're going to be fine. You know, just like a reminder. So she's someone that has helped me so much.
Yeah. Speaking of that, like someone being on your side, being in your corner, you gave me a list of names. Are you like that to so many people now today?
You know, if you asked me this like 5-6 years ago, I might be like, I don't know, maybe. But in my last couple of years, because I'm like that old player, you know, like you're kind
the
of
OG.
Like, exactly. And so the younger players, they come in. So for Seattle, like these young players, so it's Brianna Stewart, it's Jewel Lloyd. But then we have some other players too who aren't necessarily like young. And I've definitely tried to be that for them, like in that franchise as their teammate, but also as like their biggest fan. Definitely telling them the truth, like encouraging them. I feel like that's where you can really leave a mark. Like winning is what it is. Don't get me wrong. That's obviously how you leave. That's how you get build a legacy, but part of your legacy. And this is actually something Kobe said. So I'm totally stealing it from Kobe, but I remember when he said, talking about there's going to be another MVP, there's going to be another scoring champion, but like, what else are you going to do to leave your mark? And in the last couple of years, it kind of happened naturally, but I've really tried to do that in Seattle.
Yeah, it's so amazing. It's funny that you just mentioned Kobe. I just got the alert that popped up, him, Kevin Garnett, Tim Duncan, all those guys elected into the Hall of Fame. This how major is that, you know, for the game of basketball? And also, is it one huge takeaway that you could take away from the late, great Kobe Bryant that, you know, he planted a seed that he planted with you?
Yeah, I mean, so recently I just did another interview and I said it on this interview. And this didn't, like, come to me until, no joke, only like a couple weeks ago. It was random. I was, like, thinking about it and it kind of just, like, snapped. Like, so Kobe means so much to so many people as a player. And I saw that firsthand because Diana Taurasi, like, they became friends later. But, like, Dee grew up watching Kobe. Like, Dee's a fan of Kobe Bryant. It's not about, like, basketball and kind of equals. Like, Dee really looks up to him in this way. And I actually got to live, like, vicariously through her in this fan way. Because I'm a New York girl. I'm a Knicks fan. I really don't care about the Lakers. No offense. So Kobe Bryant, like, wasn't my guy. But watching how he impacted Diana was amazing. So there's that, but then there's like this other part where he was a dad and he had a daughter who was getting into basketball. And what I really took away from it was he saw in Gigi, he saw the same determination. He saw the same work ethic. He saw the same hunger that he probably had at her age. But then he also saw like she wasn't going to have the same opportunities that he had. And I think he was really trying to like develop women's basketball, girls' basketball, and like get it to a place so she could have those same opportunities. And I mean, for him to do, obviously he wants to do it for his daughter, but I think the respect level he used to show, you know, even before Gigi became a baller, and just, I don't know, there's something about that where when you have somebody like Kobe Bryant kind of validating you, it means a lot. It means a lot to you personally. It means a lot, like, for the world to see it.
Yeah, I could totally echo those sentiments. You know, still to this day, 2 days ago, my wife caught me, you know, looking through text messages because we used to text regularly, at least like once every 2 weeks, and some of the messages that he left me. And like you said, you know, having that big brother, that validation, someone just to lean upon. I mean, he was that for me, and he's dearly missed. I also wanted to talk about, you know, something that you touched on. And look, when I look at UConn's basketball program, how can you explain the, you know, how they've been so good and so great for so long. I know that, you know, you got to have talent, and you have Maya Moore, Diana Taurasi. I mean, obviously yourself, Swin Cash, list goes on. Mm-hmm. But how have you guys been able to sustain that just that measure of excellence?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the story, you know? And all I can say is whether, you know, I heard stories from like Rebecca Lobo and Jen Rosati who came before me. Obviously, I had my own four-year experience. And then you go back to practice maybe now, or you hear stories from the younger players. The thing that's like most impressive and most amazing is like Coach Ariyama, Chris Daly. And then they've really had like, it was Jamel and Tanya when I was in school. And then now it's like Shay, Marissa was there for a while, but now Jamel's back. So it's like been this, those, that coaching staff, they're literally the same as they were like 20, 30 years ago as they are now. That's the impressive part. A, you're smashing people. How do you not get bored? They don't. They come to practice the next day, like all up in your ass about something you did. And it's like that, it's like they never have a drop off. And because they never have a drop off, you as a player can't. So whether you're playing, you know, Tennessee or Notre Dame for the national championship game, or you're playing, no offense to anyone I'm about to name, but, or you're playing, you know, for us, like St. John's was always weak. Like, oh, you're playing St. John's. Sorry.
Put it out there. Let them know how you feel, sis.
I mean, we are coming back to this.
Yeah, they weak. They weak as hell. Let them be known.
Okay, there we go. So yeah, it was no matter who we were playing, it was the same because they were, and that's like crazy for them to like never, to be honest, like never get bored. But they are not bored. They always are like nitpicking or something.
That, so you have to explain this to me. Like, I know you said you was about to call the NCAA tournament. Now, is this something that we should be looking forward to seeing out of you going forward? Like a lot of, you know, in-studio stuff, maybe even play-by-play. I mean, is this something that's a new thing?
Maybe. Yeah, I'm starting to get into it a little bit. I've done my the color stuff like in game too. It's like, and it's cool. Like, but it's some of it's hard. Like, you got to learn a lot. It's like it can be challenging. And to be honest, the part that I didn't like was the travel. I was going like all over the place. So I kind of got into studio this past year, and I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. It was a nice change of pace from doing in-game stuff. So you never know. Maybe you'll see me next year.
Man, look, heavy credentials. When you talk about the story of basketball, not just WNBA, but I mean this in all seriousness, the story of basketball, you tell the story of basketball without mentioning you. So I think that, you know, you being on the sideline, you being on the studio, it'd be a huge asset to whatever organization is able to have, you know what I mean? So like that'd be special. The networks are going to go crazy. And I think that your personality, I mean, I could feel it through, you know, we're Skyping right now basically, and I could see it, you know, your personality, like I feel your energy, like it's something special to watch. And you always been like, you got to give me one of those stories from UConn, you know, not basketball, you, that you just, you know, always reminisce or think about, you know, away from the game. You know, living on that campus, that stores.
You're trying to get the Husky head story out of me? Is that what's happening?
Yeah, give me one of those classic stories.
I'm sure you were the guy just like posted up on the mirror, just looking around. Was that your Huskies just, move?
Just watching everything. Husky blues, everything. All that.
Oh, Husky blues, RIP. That is no longer with us.
It's crazy, right?
Yeah, I know. It's so different. I don't know. When's the last time you – I've actually been back because I'm not that far. It's still – every time I go back, it's, like, dramatically different. I can't even keep up. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Story, a story off the court? I mean, you know, college shenanigans, Karan. College shenanigans.
What's that club we used to go to up there at Hartford? There was no camera phone. Facts. What's that club we used to go to? Pyramid. Remember that club? You ever been to Hartford?
Like, hitting up Hartford, yeah. But who wants to hit up Hartford tonight? You hitting up Hartford? Who's hitting up Hartford? Except we went to go see – here's a story. It was – I think it was Swin's birthday, matter of fact. Swin's birthday is like late September. And Foxy Brown was coming to one of those clubs in Hartford. Who knows?
That's what it was.
And we Pyramid. Like got all dressed up, probably. I don't remember the name. But we got all dressed up and Mr. Vegas was opening. I mean, I vividly remember this. Heads high. That whole thing. So we go, Foxy gets on the stage for one song, Gunshots. Like, come on, Hartford. Come on, Hartford. Everybody, obviously, I mean, like, there was gunshots. So it was like panic and everything. We got out of there, but ay, ay, ay.
That was Club Pyramid. I remember. So listen, you got to talk to me a little bit about just, you know, looking at the landscape of the WNBA and, you know, some of the things that you've seen change since 2002. Not clearly, you guys have a new CBA agreement. Touch on that a little bit, but also just, you know, the game as a whole from a talent standpoint.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the best way to explain it, it's like survival of the fittest in the WNBA. So it's like there's 12 teams, there's 12 roster spots. You know, it's literally math. Like, you have to fight and claw. So you have to be good just to be on a roster spot, just to be on a team. And so I think through the years, like, I came into the league at 2002 and same year, right? Didn't you get drafted same year? Actually, yeah, good story.
We got a lot in common, fam.
Yeah, I know. I know. It's wild. Because I remember I saw you in Miami, but I remember we were playing. We were, like, playing. We were in Phoenix. And they had, like, this TV right before you run out, like, by the tunnel. And the draft was on. And I was like, wait. I got to see. And it was like, what pick were you?
10th pick.
Yes. With the number 10 pick, Miami. But I was like, yo, oh my boy, I just went to
the live.
For real. But yeah, so the WNBA, it's like from the start, like my start to now, it's like 18 years or so. With every draft class, it just gets like that much harder to make a team because it's not that many spots. So the product has just gotten so much better over time. And now we're at a point where it just speaks for itself. It's competitive, it's high level. You know, it's just there's so much talent, all that stuff. And then now we redid the CBA. So now we have just like a structure that we can really that makes sense for us, because we kind of just would copy and paste with the NBA and it didn't like make sense for us. The rules and stuff just didn't make sense. So now we kind of have something that makes sense for us. So hopefully it can catapult.
So you touched on playing overseas as well. What are some of the biggest positives that you could take from playing overseas, and how has that game, like, in those leagues, a lot of players?
Yeah, well, that's overseas is kind of like this gift and a curse, because it's a gift for us, because we get to go play, make a lot of money, way more than the WNBA. I think it's a curse for the WNBA because it takes us away from America. But when you're over there, you're just constantly in games, and you're able to, for a player that maybe, let's say they're like 6th, 7th, 8th on your WNBA team. When they go overseas, they're probably the man on their team and they have to score 20 and they have, so you really get to like develop this mindset. Yeah, you get to like play and work on your game too, but I think it's the mindset that you develop over there that when you take it back, it really helps players. It really does. And then like when you're living in another culture, it grows you up fast. Your maturity level like skyrockets because you're really on your own in this new place. But it's something I would never trade. I feel like, I don't know how else to explain this other than like, I'm so much, not that I was ever judgmental, but when you live somewhere else and you have to like be in another culture, you just learn to appreciate different things. So I'm definitely not like someone who is ever quick to judge, but now I just have so much, I have an appreciation for different cultures.
Is with the new CBA, is it still a huge difference financially? Like, will overseas basketball still be a huge carrot for, you know, female athletes to still go and entertain?
Yeah. So there's like all levels, right? Like different levels. You have like your tippy top players and it kind of trickles down. So what the WNBA, I think, has able to do with this new CBA or what we were able to do is give other ways to make money. So like there's marketing agreement deals and there's just like different ways. Well, first of all, the money in the salary cap went up by a lot. So now instead of the max dollar being $117,000, now players can make like, God, I'm drawing a blank, like over 200. I think it's like 215 is the max contract. So that's already like $100,000 more. So that's great. And then there's now there's like all these offseason opportunities. So if you want to stay, there's a bank of money there that you can kind of take. Now, I feel like it's always going to be, like I said, it's always going to be like, can you make more overseas? How much more than WNBA? And for everyone, it'll just be like that sliding scale. Because to be honest, Like, let's say overseas offered me, pick a number, $700,000. And the WNBA could only, I can make like $500,000 at home. I don't know. For some people, they're taking the money. For some other people, they'd rather stay home. And like, you can do more. When you're home, you can just do more. And you're around your family and whatnot. So it's always going to be like a slice. And that was actually a really dramatic number. $200,000 is too much. But I think you know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I know you're just using numbers and range. I got you. You cold, sis. You on your feet. You quick. I'm telling you, you got a knack for this thing. That's crazy. So, like, another thing. In 2018, right, you become the basketball operations associate for the Denver Nuggets. Like, what was the most eye-opening thing that you learned being in the –
Man, there's a lot of dudes that aren't even that good making a lot of money. No offense. No
offense.
No
offense. It's the truth. It's the truth.
Yeah, it's just like, listen, it happens in the WNBA. It's just the money is not as much, so it's not as glaring. But like sometimes for some guys, right place, right time, maybe a team's a little bit of a crunch or something, like where they feel desperate and the wrong guy gets paid. I'm like, I mean, that was true. I definitely, because one of the first meetings I sat in on was like a full recap of all team salary cap situations. So it's like it had every player, every team, and all the contracts. And that was like, whoa, it was a lot of money. Like, whoa, these dudes are making a lot of money. But otherwise, I think like, yeah, it's a lot of money. But otherwise, I think like, honestly, I really, and I know Tim, somebody you know well, like I love being around Tim because like he's so smart, he's so experienced, but he also like, doesn't take himself too seriously. Like he understands in the grand scheme. He's like, listen, he's like, I'm putting together a basketball team. Like, how lucky am I? And then he's kind of also like, and sometimes you hit. So obviously with like someone like the Joker, they hit big with that second round pick. And then he was telling me a story about how they basically passed on Donovan Mitchell. Oh. And so it's like, yeah, it's like there's this and then there's that. And he's also just like, yeah, whatever. You just do the best you can. He's like, don't be scared to make a choice. And I was like, okay. I like that. I just really enjoyed learning from him. I mean, but honestly, all the guys were cool there. I had such a great time.
Did you ever have any problem or stepping out that box, or have you ever had to step outside the box and just give some insight of how you saw the game, like your evaluation to some of the players, or did anybody ask you personally?
So right away, Calvin Booth, he's the assistant GM. He was kind of like talking to me about my role and where he thought like I could. And I did some scouting, but like, I mean, I'm not out. I'm like, there's like actual scouts who like know this way better. So it's like, yeah, I'll watch a guy. I'll give my opinion, whatever. But he was also like, hey, like, why don't you form relationships with the point guards? Like, obviously, you know a lot about being a point guard. So I got pretty cool with Monte Morris. And it was a lot of fun just to like talk shop with him and like hear his thoughts. And, you know, there was like any season, right? First of all, if you rewind a year, he had a little bit of a breakout year. Like it was his, I think it was his first year not having to be in the G League. So like it was his first real year and he really had a great year. But there was also like a moment in the season where, you know, it slumped down a little bit, totally normal. And it was really cool to talk about that, like as it was happening, try to help a guy like that through that. I don't think I said anything that like blew his mind, but it was nice just to have, I think, someone who's kind of like equal in that way, where you can just kind of talk basketball and not have it be threatening or anything like that. Cause you know, sometimes I've had this too. It's like when you talk to a coach, you don't know how open and honest you can be. You're like, is it going to go somewhere else? So it was cool to have that relationship with Monte.
Oh, that's pretty dope. Yeah, it's amazing. Breakdown too, what you just gave us. And I look at your career and how great it has been. And now, like you said, you're an OG, the oldest active player in the WNBA. Like, what keeps you going at this point? Like, you've done everything, perennial all-star. Damn, I think you was the damn logo or something. I mean, what haven't you done in the game? Like, what's left, sis? Like, what the fuck?
That's hearsay.
I mean, sis, what the fuck? What's next?
Yeah, I don't know. Sometimes I'm not even going to lie. At this point, there are days I wake up and I'm like, yo, you are fucking crazy. What are you doing? Why are you doing lunges right now? Like, you could be doing something else. Why are you doing this? And then there are days where I'm like, man, I can still do this. I feel pretty good. Like, I should just do this until I can. So I definitely have like a seesaw with it. But I think at the end, I don't know. I actually am starting to take like great pride in being 39 and like being this old player, but like still being able to do it. And I feel like all these old players, like you talk about, well, I always joke. I'm like, LeBron's not old. Everyone calls LeBron old. I'm like, I get it. He played a lot of games, but he's actually not old. But he is. He is. He is. So like LeBron, Tom Brady, I feel like myself, Diana Taurasi, like all these players that are knocking on the door of 40. I mean, Tom's over 40, but we are kind of starting this new, like 40's the new 30. We're like kind of starting this new thing where if you take care of your body, you do this, you can play till whenever. And it's kind of, I don't know, I take pride in being part of that like first little group to really do that.
Yeah, that's what Chris Paul said. He has a documentary called, I had it at the tip of my tongue. I lost it, but Game Changers. That's what it is. And it's him, Jackie Chan, and Arnold Schwarzenegger, the executive produced the documentary. He just talked about like how he's feeling the best he's ever felt, like injury free, all these things, and that he want to play another 6 to 8 years, and he want to play at a high level if he's able to. But this is the best he ever felt. So, you know, to echo what you just said, like, you see that. That's the new wave. Technology has changed a lot. How has technology?
Yeah. So for me, it's like you're just able to monitor things in this totally unique way. And I'll be completely honest. Like I hired somebody to like do that for me because what the hell do I know? But she's like, you know, I wear this Whoop strap. So she like monitors my heart rate during workouts. I'm trying to think of other technology stuff. Oh, there's people that wear. Oh, like the catapult. I tried to do that 1 year. It was a little hard though. Like you had to have like, I don't know. But anyways, I think for me though, it's been the nutrition. That's where like things have really changed. Just like, I don't eat like, I'm actually not plant-based or vegan, but I'm very particular about, but yeah, I mean, the one thing that, I don't know how this is going to come off. I'm just going to say it. It's like, imagine Chris Paul, right? Like 6, 7, 8 years from now. And that's kind of how I feel where I am in my career. It's like, as long as your body can still do it, your brain continues to grow too, right? Like your experience, your smarts, all that, your IQ continues to grow. And then now you're playing against these young who are dumb. So now you have, like, you have like this whole other advantage. Cause like when they're your age, you kind of have the same experience level. So you don't even have to be as quick as you don't have to be as strong as you were. None of that. Because you're so much smarter. It's like, it's actually really cool to play at this age because you can like outthink people.
So basically what you're saying is when you come off a pick, you be like, girl, you can't guard me. You can't even write in cursive. I'm about to bust your ass.
I mean, listen, you said, it's more like, oh, fell for it.
Like that. Too easy. My last thing, and I really appreciate you coming on too. Legacy and all that you've accomplished and done, like what do you really ultimately want remembered as and for?
So I think for my whole career, all I cared about was winning. Like it started to dawn on me. That's what I was good at. Like I was good at being a player on a team, not being the best player on that team, but I was good at being that player to kind of help put it all together, go on this journey. And I always thought like, you can't argue that. Like there's going to be point guards that come and go. There's going to be players that come and go. And there's always conversation of who was better. But the one thing you can't take away, because you can talk about points, rebounds, this and that, but you can't at the end of the day, even when we talk about like LeBron, Kobe, Jordan, what always gets mentioned at the end, Jordan won 6 times. Oh, Kobe won 5. You know, like that's always the last. So I always felt like, it's like if I take care of that, that'll be my. But as I was telling you earlier, like it starts to change a little bit. You start to realize you want to have a larger impact. And I feel like it's showing for me, like with my Seattle Storm teammates and how I can help them. And then with this, like I was the OG, I mean, OG everywhere at this point, but I was the OG on that committee. And it was, my voice had a different weight because of that. And I really wanted to help and kind of leave the game better, you know? So it's a combination of those two things.
Sis, I would definitely say you've done that and beyond. And wherever you just know that, you know, your brother over here be supporting you and repping you to the full. And I appreciate your time. And, you know, through all the chaos trying to download the damn app and all that stuff, man, you still stay with it. So I appreciate you. Thank you. And I
Nah, same. Love you too. Thank you so much for having me.
All right, sis. Be safe.